Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of Blood and Treasures. This is a CBS show that was a summer show, ran for 13 episodes.
The commercials for it are what got me to watch it.
This is an action-adventure archaeology sort of a thing.
It's got that swashbuckling Indiana Jones feel to it, especially in the commercials.
Yeah, there's an aspect of Indiana Jones, National Treasure, Tomb Raider. It's a cross between a police procedural and an archaeology thing. It's essentially archaeologists versus terrorists, almost.
I'd almost give it a little bit Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, yeah. The whole thing, the first season, was around finding Anthony and Cleopatra's tombs, and a terrorist was also going after them. In theory, to release a huge plague or some such.
Well, and it took a while for them to explain how a terrorist could use something from these mummies to commit a terrorist attack. And, I mean, they went through the mummy curse, which I think actually is really where the character Shaw got some of his best scenes.
Well, the mummy curse, the mummy cancer, I think is what they were calling it.
Yes. A few things.
They play a little fast and loose with the terminology because some of them are not, you know, medically inclined or whatever.
Well, and exactly. They have one character who can give the whole medical, you know, it does do this, yada, yada, yada. And then Shaw comes in with, you mean I was exposed to mummy cancer?
Well, the main players are, you've got a guy who's ex-FBI.
Yes.
His ex-girlfriend, who's a master thief.
So you've got Danny, the FBI, and Lexi Vizzari.
The master thief. You've got Father Chuck, which is a childhood friend of Danny's, who's now a...
He's a Catholic priest from America who is, and it's the wrong word to use, but stationed, in Rome at the Vatican. And they get some great use out of the Vatican City and stuff as well. Mm-hmm.
We've got a Interpol agent who's stationed with the Carabinieri there in Rome.
And has some kind of past relationship with Danny as well.
Yeah. You've got Jacob Reese, who is kind of the rich patron of Danny, that has known him for forever and a day.
And Dr. Anna Castillo, who is the archaeology, not just professor, but mentor to Danny in a lot of respects. And the one who I honestly thought would be in more of the episodes than she was.
Yeah, because she's playing kind of the knowledgeable one about the Anthony Cleopatra stuff. And this is something that Jacob Reese, the rich guy, was always kind of, he's been trying to chase this down for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out later on, it was something his father had tried to do too.
Well, yeah, they managed to tie this back to the Nazis and secret societies and so many wonderful things that they wove together.
And before getting on that, I just want to touch on three other characters real quick.
Okay.
There's Farouk,
yes,
who's the terrorist. There's Simon, who was captured by the terrorist at one point and is just also in the international antiquities business. And then there's Shaw, who's one of those, I'm trying to think what's the best way, a mercenary is not the right term.
Well, he's kind of on the illegal antiquities side of things.
Yeah.
Simon Hardwick is supposed to be on the legal antiquities side of things.
Well, and more of a buyer-seller.
Yes.
Whereas Shaw is the acquirer and, you know, doer sort of a thing. But the whole thing is around, where is Anthony and Cleopatra? That's the big thing throughout.
Well, and where do they belong?
Where do they belong? Where were they lost in time? Who found them when? So throughout, there are times where they'll cut to a map, a date that goes from wherever we're at, rolling backwards or forward to the next time zone, as it's kind of zooming in and out onto the other thing, and literally repositioning us anywhere from, I think they went as far back as maybe the 50s?
The 40s.
40s.
Because we were in World War II.
Got to World War II. from the 40s to, you know, 2019.
Yeah. We had some shots in the 70s, so quite a few decades were covered.
It's got that globe-trotting aspect. And again, just like in Indiana Jones, where you would see the map and all that kind of stuff, you get that sense of, okay, we're traveling, they're getting to here. And they're bouncing between Rome, Paris, Cairo, New York, I think, at times. I mean, they're all over the globe.
Yeah, New York, Venice.
Venice, yeah.
There were other places in Germany and Italy when we were tracking the Nazi stuff.
And for some of these, it's not just they say they're in Venice.
Yeah.
We see them in Venice.
Yeah. And, well, that's one of the great things about the show. And between some of the episodes, I commented to you, so many TV shows film in Europe to lower the budget, but try to pretend they're in America.
Yeah.
This show filmed in Europe and made the most of it. And it was just breathtaking when they're not just saying they're filming in Rome, but you can see the Colosseum in the background, or you can see the steeples and tops of the churches in the background and the ruins. And there was one shot they did that they even labeled what set of ruins it was at. And it was so gorgeous. I went Googling and yeah. Those are some real ruins just outside Rome. And I'm like, yeah, that's going on my bucket list.
Well, and again, Venice is such a unique city that it's not like anything else could just stand in for it.
No, but having been there when they had a change in time of day that was a bit too dramatic.
Yeah, they get off one of the boats at one point. It's midday or whatever. And by the time they get where they're going, it's like night. And I'm like, how far did they have to walk? It's not that big of a city.
Yeah.
And if so, they could have gotten dropped off closer.
Yes.
There's a lot of action, both in terms of car chases at times, stunts. At one point, somebody's getting picked up by a helicopter. And that's literally, they're at a crime scene. They got to go back to Cairo. They're getting picked up. And it's something that they could have easily just said, hey, you know, the helicopter will be here in a few minutes. Cut. And they're there. The helicopter flies down. They get in. They're not skimping on the production values.
Yeah. Well, and to that end, when we went to the crypt the Brotherhood of Serapis was in, all the Serapis members had those green medallions, and we saw this wall full of them that was kind of illuminated behind.
Yeah, there was a couple of good set pieces, some they went to a couple of times, some not as often as you might expect, but the Serapis set piece for their hidden crypt or whatever. You've got Chuck's place, you've got the Carminari headquarters, you've got the museum, you've got Reese's office.
Well, what I loved about the Brotherhood of Serapis crypt was in some of the other rooms, okay, it's just a crypt, we're getting the feel for it, but when they went in there, having told us every member wears one of those medallions, and when they die, their medallion is brought back here, it gives you the sense that even though we've only seen 20 or 30 of these guys out and about on missions, you see this wall of 200 or more medallions. Because
they've been around for thousands of years.
Yeah. And you see this is a big organization. We're just seeing their local. And
what's interesting is it clearly means they don't reuse the necklaces or whatever.
It's a very personal item.
Yeah. But there didn't seem to be any personalization, not even a serial number on it.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I get, because you don't want to say, oh, it's number 5,000. There's 5,000 of them, you know.
Well, but it was also they operate in the shadows. They don't want to be known. They don't want to be seen.
I think they did a good job throughout the season of giving us something to, the answer to this question or whatever, but to keep moving it forward and feeling the progression and not just a treadmill.
Evolving questions in terms of finding Anthony and Cleopatra, evolving questions of who can we trust?
Who can we trust? Are Danny and Lexi getting along? Are they not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's happening with this other character? You know, is this a wild goose chase? Is it not?
Yeah.
And
who's the mastermind behind the terrorist plot?
Well, and also, there at the end, we're coming down to two people that were on the not up and up. And, you know, do you feel equally bad for the two of them?
Yes.
And they did it's a tough thing for them to have an overarching kind of a thing like this, where the entire thing is on point for the mission, if you will, versus some shows have arc episodes and kind of filler episodes.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing here that was filler.
No.
But to do that in a way where you're constantly moving it forward and not feeling like, well, that didn't amount to anything, or that was a waste of time, or that took forever, or wow, they got to that too quick.
Well, it's funny because now that we've reached the end of the season, there's part of me that wants to go back and rewatch parts of it. Because, like, there was an episode where we got Simon Hardwick's backstory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in that episode, the way certain things played out, I felt we were getting definitely his version of things. But that was the first time I became suspicious of him.
Well, there are a couple of times where we find one thing out, and then later we find out more about that sort of event. And I didn't have, and part of it is there was a bit of a gap between when we watched most of it, because it's a summer show, we watched a lot of it before Comic-Con, and in the last, what, three episodes or whatever,
mm-hmm.
well after Comic-Con. I didn't have anything where I felt, wow, that totally goes against what we thought we knew or had been told.
Well, we had been told that Kareem Farouk was not the legal name of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So that had me watching for, okay, could someone else be Kareem Farouk?
Well, particularly when we found out about another Farouk.
Yes.
It's
yes.
like, well, there's some name here. And I think they gave us the clues to piece stuff together, some of it a little late in the game, but not one of those where it's like, well, the butler did it. What do you mean? There's a butler?
Yeah.
Or, of course, the butler did it. You know, neither of those reactions.
Well, in the episode where Simon was giving us his backstory, when he got to the Danny rescued him part, the way he was alone in the container just waiting to be rescued,
mm-hmm.
to me, it had kind of felt like, because Farouk wasn't there at the time. Farouk had already fled the camp, and yeah. Danny was so disappointed. So to me, it just reeked of setup.
Yeah. It's
like Farouk had left him there to be rescued.
The story they gave us at the time is that they had scared him off or whatever and had just missed him. But yeah, yeah. I thought they gave reason to suspect a lot of people. And there mm-hmm. was certainly one character worth suspecting at the time. But not one where it was so clear cut either way. I mean, they could have, at the end, without, I think, too much work, pulled out like Father Chuck as he's the big bad or something like that. And I think the writing team could have made that work. Would have been hard, but I think...
It would have been hard because I loved Father Chuck. He was a great character.
But they could have also said, well, you know, he's been around the whole time. He's been the confidant. He's been, you know...
Yeah.
So they never, I think, really threw suspicion on him.
Yeah.
But I think they had it such that, particularly with the you need to come with us at one point, you know, mm-hmm. kind of a thing... There are ways that they can have things spin a little bit, you know, either 180 or whatever at a time or back. And the writing, I think they had solid characters with good motivations, strong personalities.
I was going to say, these were very three-dimensional characters, and Shaw is a great example of that.
Well, I think even, you know, the two leads, Danny and Lexi and stuff, were those that are polar opposites at times, but in a way that the polar opposites attract. And also, you could see where each is rubbing off on the other.
Exactly.
And they made a comment at the end of, look how far we've come. This happened to me and I went this way, which you would have done.
Mm-hmm.
And you went that way, which I would have done, kind of a comment.
Yeah, exactly.
And they earned all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw years, because they would do flashbacks on how these two met, how they've gotten to know each other and that kind of stuff. And relationships very much change over the course of just 13 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be hard pressed to name any relationship other than maybe Danny and Father Chuck that did not undergo a radical shift over the course of the time.
Radical and believable.
Yes. And that exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
It's not just that they, you know, suddenly, oh, they're enemies and whatnot, or, oh, they've made up. You know, they do it in a way that you can buy into and believe. And to me, that's a sign of solid writing, but also really good cast that's able to sell the material.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that it's easy to sell helps.
Well, it's funny because at one point tonight, when we were watching the final three episodes, you were commenting on the music,
mm-hmm.
which at times had a very Stargate sound to it.
Well, particularly the opening credit type stuff.
Yeah. But there are aspects of it that do remind me of first season Stargate. in terms of the discovering cultures and that sense of wonder and discovery.
Well, and particularly early on with Stargate, certainly in the movie and stuff, there is an aspect of archaeology is a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, when you're going back to the cradle of civilization and the mysteries therein, you know, there's definite similarities there. Now, there are going to get a second season for this. And I'm curious, are they going to continue this sort of plot line? Is Farouk going to, you know, somehow be a threat next season, even after the fact or whatever, his people or his legacy or something like that? Or is there some new thing that these people kind of get tapped to go deal with? Because they had a clean ending here.
They did.
And I respect that.
I'm grateful for it. They've established themselves as being the ones who can track down treasure hunters who don't deal honestly, legitimately with treasures.
Yeah.
They've established themselves as feeling that treasures belong on display in the home country, that they shouldn't be sold for profit.
But they've also established that they're not there just to find the lost painting or whatever. They're there for the big stakes stuff.
Yes.
You know, there were times where it was feeling like the stakes here were, you know, not necessarily end of the world, but major catastrophe, terrorist attack sort of thing.
Yeah.
So they need to have a threat next season that is worthy of them.
Mm-hmm.
And one that makes sense for them in particular to be point on.
Yeah. Well, and they definitely set it up to where Danny and Lexi, head of the team.
Mm-hmm.
But then, especially at the end, they gave the strong impression that Father Chuck, Interpol Agent Gwen, and then Shaw.
Yeah. Those are the five that'll come back next.
Yeah.
If they don't, it's a missed opportunity.
I mean, we saved Jacob Reese's life, but his reputation's in tatters. He's ruined.
Well, and even that character wasn't in all the episodes.
True.
That was John Larroquette guest starring as that character.
Yeah.
And he did a terrific job.
But he bankrolled the season from the character's point of view.
Yes. He was in the pilot in such a way that he facilitated what was going on, but made me wonder if it was one of those we'd see him in the pilot and then never again.
Yeah.
So I was happy to see him as much as we did, but surprised.
I'm just thinking next season we need a bankroll.
We need somebody to come with them to them with a, I need you to solve this and I will pay for the travel, the expenses, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's to me, the big challenge of the first episode of the second season. How do you pull this team back together and empower them and get them bought in on whatever the next mission is?
Yeah.
Because there was an aspect of the show, as much as I was loving it, that made me wonder if it was a one-season wonder of, they've got this great thing, they're going to either find or not find Anthony and Cleopatra, they'll stop the terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm.
But then what?
Yeah.
Because we'd seen shows like Zero Hour or a few others that were, frankly, not identical to this, but similar high concept.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those were more the mystery than the action we tend to get here. But we got the action, the mystery and stuff here, which I loved. But stuff that once you've solved that, there was nothing left for them to do.
Yeah. Well, and part of the magic here was that you had both the treasure hunt and the terrorist attack.
Yeah. Well, and you had the cop paired with the thief.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do stuff of, let's do a police investigation. You can have stuff of, let's do a bank robbery.
Yeah.
You know, and the different angles from which to pursue it. And again, the geographical dispersion of where you could do stuff.
Well, and that last part is, I was sitting here thinking, you know, if they changed it up next season and it's, you know, we need you to do XYZ to prevent the Louvre from being destroyed, but I don't want to be confined to Paris. I loved the going all over the world.
I would almost do the next arc over in Asia.
Mm.
Just because it's a rich history to deal with. They'd be a little bit of the fish out of water. They'd certainly stand out.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a little hard to get Father Chuck in on that. But the way to do that is maybe the Vatican is the one saying, hey, here's this mission.
Yeah.
You know, there's ways to do it and also flip the almost the power dynamic and the status quo for the team.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect they're going to stay in the same neck of the woods and be kind of just a European-centric thing, but I don't know.
Interesting. I can't wait to see what they do.
Yeah. Most of these are not actors I'm familiar with from other shows.
I would agree.
Larroquette being kind of the big name.
Yeah.
And I think when you had first suggested it, I'm like, yeah, I'll check it out or whatever. I don't know these, you know. It was coming down to the concept sounded good, but if the lead actors were not ones that I enjoyed watching, don't know that I would have stuck around.
I mean,
it was good, and I'm glad I did, but in the hands of lesser actors,
yeah,
even really good material can fall flat.
I had seen one or two things that mentioned the concept and kind of blown it off as, I mean, it's a summer show, where are the odds? Then I kept seeing the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I saw the commercial, I was like, wow, I want to watch that. What is this?
Well, they had good interpersonal dynamics. They had dialogue with some spark to it. They had the action sequence. They certainly had a plot that kept moving the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think there was anything where it's just any aspect fell flat. I mean, the effects, this is not one of those where they've got, you know, crazy special effects or anything.
Yeah.
But when they would do the action stuff, when they would do the explosions or whatever, it was solid.
Well, and they did a good job with Danny and Lexi having a existing relationship and yet having to learn to trust that they had each other's backs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and could they trust Shaw? Could Shaw trust them? Are they on the same page? You know.
Mm-hmm.
I think the writer's room had a good sense of who these characters were and what their journey was going to be over the season.
Yeah.
And in some cases, what their backstory was to get them through that arc.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I don't feel every show either has or has to the level this one did, or that they do, but they just don't have the writing to really have that come through on the screen.
Well, they seem to have decided pretty early on that Brotherhood of the Serapis was simply a name, not a literal men-only brotherhood.
Yes.
And they played assumptions against the viewer on that.
I kind of expect the Brotherhood is not completely wiped out and would be a factor next season.
It'd be interesting if the Brotherhood's what comes to them.
Either what comes to them or that they're able to leverage the resources out of gratitude for,
yeah,
you know, what had happened. Or maybe the Brotherhood's upset that, you know, Anthony and Cleopatra are on public display or something.
Yeah.
There are a couple of ways they could go. But I think it's, you know, the first episode of the next season, I think, is pivotal of do they just go another season or is it something that they show that they can go multiple seasons?
Yeah.
Because if they set it off on the wrong foot, it may be a fun ride, but not enough to get people thinking, yeah, I'll come back season after season.
I agree.
But I want to see them go with it. It's nice to have some good summer shows that are, you know, again, 13 episodes, pretty much a straight shot with a good beginning, middle, and end.
Well, and light, fun, relaxing entertainment.
Yeah. It's popcorn type stuff. It's not deep meaning of life type stuff, but it's not shallow either.
Yeah.
This had a lot more depth and characterization to it than, like, Whiskey Cavalier.
Yes.
Which was a fun show, but in a different way. And I think that just the amount of substance and depth this got in over the 13 episodes is something that I think most shows maybe strive for, but few kind of hit that level.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some where it's like, yeah, they'll have the great action sequences, but in a way that it's like to get them off the hook from having to write good story.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel that was the case here. So I'm curious where they go with it and looking forward to a second season.
I agree.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.